Good evening. You're listening to Outsources, a KGNU Boulder Denver program that brings you stimulating and thoughtful perspectives on the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer communities. I'm your host, Angela Palermo. As always, I'm pleased to be here with you for another episode of Colorado's only regularly scheduled LGBT-themed radio show, and I'm very excited to speak with tonight's guest. As some listeners probably know, I donated a kidney to my friend Cameron Whitley on October 20th in Philadelphia. My last Outsources episode featured a conversation with Cam and his wife Melanie. In any event, the first 2 weeks or so of my recovery were a bit of a bumpy road. I received cards, gifts, and personal visits from a number of folks, which was greatly appreciated. My guest tonight, M. House, visited me along with her partner and sometimes drag king, Gavin Danger. We had a wonderful talk for about 60 minutes. I'd never met M before, but her genuineness and the scope of her work and studies as a sex educator really impressed me. I felt as if I was in the process of making a new friend. As we talked more about her work, I started thinking, I should have M as a guest on Outsources. And so the seed of tonight's episode was planted. M House, her first name spelled E-M, short for Emily, calls herself a therapeutic sexuality and gender coach, and has been educating people about shame-free sexuality since 2006. Trained by the Coaches Training Institute and Planned Parenthood, and certified in our Whole Lives Sexuality and Identity curriculum, she focuses on sexuality throughout the lifespan, sensual playfulness, and deepening one's sexual power. M is currently earning her master's degree in human sexuality and clinical social work at a university in the Philadelphia area, providing people with therapeutically strengthened sexuality coaching. She has recently returned from co-leading a sex and sexuality workshop in China. When we first met in Philadelphia, she was just days away from flying out to Shanghai. I'm really eager to hear how that trip went. In any event, welcome, Em, and thanks so much for being on Outsources.
Hey, Angela. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
Oh, it's great to have you here. Starting out, I'm wondering if you might tell our listeners a little bit about yourself. Where are you from, and was it out here in Colorado?
Yes. I'm not originally from Colorado. I'm originally from New York, but I lived in Colorado for about 5 years, and it's definitely where my heart has felt the most at home. I think, like you said in the intro, I currently work as a sexuality and gender coach, and I moved from Colorado to Philly to get two masters, one in clinical social work and one in human sexuality or psychology.
I'm just curious, what was your major as an undergraduate, and which university did you attend? I think sex educators are kind of amazing people, so I'm always interested in their career paths.
Yeah, we're kind of a motley crew, aren't we? So I went to Wesleyan University out in Connecticut for undergrad, and when I was there, I majored in feminist gender and sexuality studies with a concentration in anthropology. But I think that where I kind of got started as a sex geek was way before that. I remember when I was a kid hoarding the What's Happening to My Body, a book for boys and a book for girls in my room, and then going searching for all the kind of illicit sexuality books in my household that were like under beds and in closets. And so I think that's kind of where I got my initial kind of launching pad. But then definitely it was honed when I went to Wesleyan and got a chance to study that stuff with her more in depth.
And while you were at Wesleyan, did you involve yourself in any like sex education work or sexuality projects?
Totally. I think I did what you might imagine a little sex positive white feminist doing on campus. So I organized V-Day, which works to end violence against women. And I directed the vagina monologues and performed in the vagina monologues. I held a bunch of regular workshops on sexual vocalization or moaning, which actually I've developed into a larger workshop, which I now hold regularly. Or sorry, it's not something I hold regularly. It's a workshop that I now incorporate in my professional life. But yeah, I kind of dabbled in HIV education and other student health organizations. I did a bunch of organizing with the queer and trans groups on campus. So yeah, it was kind of a full spectrum jump in the pool of sexuality work in college.
You know, I'm aware of some of the feminist sex educators like Susie Bright or Barbara Corrales. Do you have any sex educators that you really look up to, or Tristan Taramino? Are there any that you have found particularly influential in your own work?
That's a great question. Sex educators. I mean, I think that Tristan Taramino is phenomenal and has done so much to help open up the conversation around sex positivity and non-monogamy. Yeah, I mean, it's such a broad span. You know, I think Midori has done a great job, too, in kind of opening up the world of kink to folks as well.
I've actually met both Midori and Tristan, so they're both really cool people.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Where did you meet them?
I met Midori at a kink workshop, like 12 years ago, probably, in the Denver area. And Tristan I've met a couple of times.
That's so cool. Yeah, I got to take a couple of Midori's workshops at Thunder in the Mountain, 2 years ago?
Oh, okay.
Really phenomenal. Really phenomenal.
So where is it that you're in graduate school right now? And can you tell us about your graduate program? What sort of classes do you take there?
I'm in graduate school at Widener University, which is just south of Philadelphia. The program I'm in, so it's a dual degree program. So the human sexuality degree is a master's in education, and that works together with the master's in social work, so kind of the clinical side of things. So the classes that I take, I mean, it's a little bit like traveling between two worlds, going between these two cohorts. You know, so I'll have like weekend classes in human sexuality where we might be talking about impact play, like BDSM, or like the cool biology of clitoral nerves, or ethical approaches to working with minor attracted adults.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll walk into my weekday social work classes, which is really mostly just social work professors and students. And I might go to say something about like non-monogamy or something. And I'll get this, oh, it's a sexuality student look. So it's there's a bunch of code switching between the two, for sure. But with regards to classes, I mean, I don't know that the titles of any of them would really blow your hair back. You know, I think we have a pretty solid range. You know, we have things ranging from like history and ethics of human sexuality to sex and disability, classes on sexual minorities, reproductive justice, sexual wellness, sex therapy, sex and aging. So there's a pretty broad spectrum that we get introduced to, for sure.
And has your work up to this point mostly focused on queer and trans folks, or have you included hetero and cisgender folks as well?
That's such a good question. I think I get especially lit up when I work with queer and trans folks. You know, I think doing work around the body, like sexuality, sensual experience of self and shame busting, like that stuff is really juicy with everyone. But it's definitely got an extra oomph kind of with our queer and trans family. But yeah, I do think that my work, I tend to go through flows. Right now, my coaching practice, which I do one-on-one, mostly one-on-one with people, and sometimes with partners. Right now, I'm working almost solely with the queer and trans folks, but in my workshops have recently been attracting more cisgender and straight-ish folks.
Mm-hmm.
And that could change next week, but that's kind of where things are right now.
And I'm guessing your program and the university are queer-friendly. Is that true? Am I making a good assumption there?
Yeah, I mean, I think human sexuality for sure. I have to be honest, it's way less of a queer magnet than I was expecting.
Huh.
But the cohort and the professors have been pretty aware and affirming. So there's room for growth, but I think, you know, they're on a good track. The social work program, I think, has a little bit farther to go. You know, I think there's a bunch more work to be done there. But, you know, I'm encouraged by how the head of the department, who's pretty new, is receiving feedback.
And would you say that the human sexuality program, would you say they're culturally competent in working with and talking about trans folks?
Yeah, I think that, you know, so I do think that the program is culturally competent around trans folks and around like gender nonconforming folks. I do think that there's always room for greater, I want to say fluidity, but kind of greater competency and greater incorporation of trans and gender nonconforming folks into the way that we talk about sexuality. Well, while there's competency, I think there can be more inclusion that can be had.
And are there any trans identified or genderqueer identified folks in the program?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, okay, cool, great.
Yeah.
And what about the Philadelphia area? Have you found it to have a large and vibrant queer community? And have you done any sex ed projects there as part of your graduate work?
Yeah, so I live in West Philadelphia, which is basically the most phenomenal, like, visible queer community that I've ever lived in.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's really great. Like, walking down the street, you know, it's really neat because I can look around and be like, oh man, there are so many people of so many different genders walking around openly showing affection with their partners. So it feels really, it's a really affirming community. And it's also a pretty socially aware and politically engaged community as well, which is really, it's really cool to experience.
Mm.
I think with regards to doing local work, just to be honest, like having just moved here and having a new community and then going into a dual master's program and working and having an internship, I've been a little bit of a hermit since I moved here. So
okay.
I haven't gotten a chance to do any of that work here yet, but I'm hoping that that changes over the next year or two.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Outsources on KGNU. I'm your host, Angela Palermo. Today, we're speaking with M. House. M. is a therapeutic sexuality and gender coach who is working on master's degrees in human sexuality and clinical social work. And she has very recently returned from co-leading a sex and sexuality workshop in China.
Well, let's start by making it clear. And we'll show them that it's not them who is appeasing.
And we'll get to that China visit. What do you like most about your sex education work and our graduate studies? Do you have any stories you'd like to share about particularly good experiences?
I think there are three things that I especially love about this work. And so there's shame busting, getting people in touch with their wildness, and putting people into conversation with each other. So I think shame busting and getting in touch with our wildness, like those are both, you know, intimately connected. So little and large ways in which folks are quietly run by shame. And when you begin to expose it and to look at it and air it out, people have so much more freedom. And so I love giving people a chance, and I do this more in like one-on-one coaching.
Mm-hmm.
I love getting people a chance to move more comfortably in their own bodies and have kind of greater access to themselves. And with that comes, you know, greater access to wildness and kind of this unruly, unfettered part of ourselves that like kind of is hungry to come out and be expressed.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things I love in our in the moaning workshops, kind of giving people an opportunity to go and explore this element of vocalization that we don't necessarily have lots of permission to explore in our, either in our sexual partnerships or just in our day-to-day lives. And so it's really fun. Like I've had people walk away from those saying, you know, oh, it's so fun to know that my voice is a powerful sexual tool, you know, that's so cool. But really, I think putting people into conversation with each other is kind of the most fun piece of this. So like I recently, in this recent workshop, we had, I think all of my workshops tend to incorporate some element of helping people to come into having a conversation with each other in a way that's a little bit more real and a little bit more open than our typical conversations about sex. Because typically when we talk about sex and sexuality, we're, you know, open about that stuff. We were like, oh, yeah, you know, I went and had sex with this person. It was great. It was terrible. I had orgasms. I didn't have orgasms. You know, it was kind of small range there. But recently in this past workshop, we had a bunch of women sit down with each other and just begin to share these kind of vulnerable, kind of smaller stories. So we had a woman who had multiple abortions who got to talk about what the physical experience of that was like.
Hmm.
mm-hmm. And a woman who didn't know where her clitoris was, kind of talking about finding out in our workshop, like, oh, this is a thing. Like, how do I find it? How did I not know about this my whole life? We had a woman who had just had an orgasm with a vibrator for the first time, and she was worried that she was going to get addicted. and talking about how, you know, like, she didn't want to stop experiencing sexual pleasure with her husband. And so was it okay for her to be having, to be orgasming with something separate from her husband?
Well, I mean,
she
can always orgasm with him wielding it. I mean,
absolutely. Right. And so it's like, these are all like, right. And so it's these conversations that people might not necessarily have with each other typically, but when we create the space for these softer, you know, kind of real and intimate conversations, it's so interesting to see people, like how people begin to open up and really kind of like blossom around each other, and how people to feed off of each other's vulnerability and kind of jump in and kind of give advice and relate to each other. That's the part that I love, is beginning to open up the conversation around sexuality and build community that way.
So having mentioned the China workshop, can you tell us what that workshop is about and why you went to China, and how does the workshop fit into your graduate program? Is it a component of your graduate work?
I would love for this to fit into my graduate work. Unfortunately, it doesn't. this is purely a separate work trip for me. So I just got back last week. It's my second time leading out in China, and I went there to lead two workshops with my co-leader, Jeff Jacobson, who's been doing sexuality coaching for upwards of 20 years. And the first workshop, which I think the one that you're talking about, is the 3-day holistic adult sexuality workshop.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that I got into it was there's this really badass Chinese coach, was Tina Zhang, and she decided over a year ago that it's part of her mission to bring sexuality work to China. And so she asked my co-leader, Jeff, who has been working in China for years, and like I said, he's been doing sexuality coaching forever. She asked if he would create a workshop and bring it to Shanghai. And so he invited me to come. And after I said, okay, but you know I don't speak Chinese yet, right? He didn't retract his invitation. So we went over together and co-created that.
So did you have to take a crash course in basic Chinese? Or?
You know, I really should have. And I'm going back in March for a third visit. And so I am planning on doing more Chinese language skill building before I go back. But so Jeff is, part of his background is also in translation. And so he held a bunch of different screens simultaneously. And so he would be co-leading and then also translating to me while, you know, while we were leading the workshop.
Wow.
So, right. I know. Amazing. The man is just a phenom. But he, yeah, so this time we fortunately had some support, and so we had people who would be there to translate for me, both listening and speaking, which was really helpful.
What were the participants like, and why were they there, and did you work exclusively with heterosexual and cisgender folks, or did any gay or bi or pan or queer or trans identified folks come to the workshop?
Yeah, so I think our group this time was pretty different from our first group. In our first workshop, I think most if not all of the participants identified as straight, but by the end we had a number of the women expressing interest in exploring sexuality with other women.
Mm-hmm.
In the second workshop, we talked a little bit more about gender identity and expression, and we had a bunch of people talk about how they feel like they're more gender nonconforming than they give themselves the freedom to outwardly express. So that was a really interesting thing to begin to explore a little bit. And we also had a bunch of self-identified queer and questioning folks in the second workshop. Yeah, I mean, I can't speak in specifics about our participants.
Right.
It was really cool because we had some people in the workshop who are doing some really phenomenal work around queerness and sex positivity in China,
mm-hmm.
And specifically around, like, based sexuality education. So that was really exciting.
What would you say was the the level of sexual knowledge or expertise amongst the workshop participants? Were they interested in were they interested at all in alternative, quote unquote, alternative relationships, poly relationships, or kink? Or did that come up at all, or was there a lot of shame around that for them?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's a great question. I think the term expertise is a little bit tricky because it's like, what does expertise really mean in the area of sexuality? You know, there were no other sexuality grad students in the room, but I think that we had a pretty great mixture of folks who were, you know, straight and queer, monogamous and non-monogamous. We had a bunch of vanilla folks. We actually had a bunch of kinky folks who play at sex clubs and know a bunch about BDSM practices. So it was a pretty, the second group was a pretty beautifully mixed crew. I think with regards to the shame that you asked about, so part of our workshop, we do work around looking at consent and communication and around doing a bunch of shame busting and, you know, looking at our sexual narrative. And I think that with any, you know, so many of us, regardless of what country we've grown up in, we have been indoctrinated into some level of shame around our bodies, our gender identity, our gender expression, our sexual orientation, or just like our expression of our basic sexuality. And so, yeah, I think that there is a bunch of shame. And I think that that's something that's common to see in any room where we're doing sexuality work.
Also curious, talking about queer and trans and kink in China, are like the queer and trans communities and the kink community and the poly community, those sort of quote-unquote alternative communities, are they able to operate more or less in the open, or is it a case that it's sort of very still underground, or is it somewhere in between, as best you can tell?
Yeah, so I just want to say I am such a I'm still learning so much about China. Like, you know, this is my second time going. I don't have an extensive background in studying China or kind of engaging with Chinese population. So this is very much just kind of what I've heard over my, you know, since June doing this work. Grain of salt with whatever I have to say about this.
Your partner, Jeff, probably has pretty good knowledge too, right?
Yeah, for sure. He definitely has more, and he definitely has more of a sense. And he's also a gay man who is a white Westerner, right?
Okay.
So there's a certain level of how much access do you have at any given moment?
Right. Yeah.
But I think so. From what I understand, I think that there definitely is a queer community, a trans community in China. I don't know that it looks like how you might expect it to look in the United States. There is a bunch of internet community for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's definitely, I think, a place where people are able to come together and have access to kind of better understanding themselves and being connected to each other. I think what's interesting about China is that, unlike the U.S., it's not significantly mitigated by the Christian right. So China doesn't have that kind of connection to religion, to feelings of morality around things like being queer or trans or like having abortions. They're not really rooted in religious dogma. So from what I understand, like, some of the things that are taboo or even illegal to portray in the media, it's not because of these kind of moralistic values that are connected to religion, but more around reasons of like filial piety or like values around honoring one's family.
Okay.
So that's like a really interesting different lens through which to look at that. So there's definitely a queer scene. It doesn't look like the queer scene in the United States necessarily. And I definitely need to learn a little bit more about the trans and non-binary issues in China. So I'll check in next time I'm there and I'll report back.
Okay. just to round out, did you and your co-leader, Jeff, have to be vetted by any Chinese organizations? And was there any concern about the legality of your work while you were there?
Yeah, so the great thing about working with Tina is that we were independently contracted to come in and do this work. So we didn't have to actually go in through an organization. I have a number of peers who have done sex education in China through educational institutions. And I know that that screening process has been rigorous, so to say the least. So I think that we were really lucky that we were able to do this work without needing to go through any kind of vetting or screening process. And around the legality of it, you know, that was something that we were definitely concerned about, because there are legal issues around sexuality in China. And because, like, some of our work is thematic and experiential, we were a little bit concerned about, you know, will we get nabbed for that?
Mm-hmm.
But what we learned is that because none of our exercises involved something like, I don't know, people actually having sex with each other, we were totally fine.
Oh, okay. Okay. So it was like no penetrative sex allowed. But if you're just working on yourself, that's okay.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
Well, we've been speaking with M. House, a therapeutic sexuality and gender coach, who has been educating people about shame-free sexuality since 2006. She's presently working on her master's degrees in human sexuality and clinical social work at Widener University in Philadelphia. And as we just heard, she's recently returned from co-leading a sex and sexuality workshop in China. Thanks so much, Em, for being on Outsources.
Thank you so much, Angela.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure. Please stay tuned.
Take care.
Oh, you too. Please stay tuned for our events and announcements section. Out Boulder County's Gender Support Groups. Weekly peer-led groups for transgender, gender non-conforming, and questioning folks in Longmont and Boulder. The Longmont group is held Tuesdays, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at 463 Main Street in Longmont. The Boulder group is held Thursdays, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Pride House, 2132 14th Street in Boulder. So, port groups are open to anyone that has a gender-expansive identity, including transgender, genderqueer, gender-fluid, agender, non-binary, and intersex people. We also support people who are questioning their identity and do not want to have labels yet. For more information, please go to www.outboulder.org/trans-resources. LGBTQ yoga. Bring your mat and enjoy a bendy, fun, relaxing, and body-affirming hour of yoga. All abilities and flexibilities are welcome. Sundays from 2:30 to 3:30 p.m. at Alchemy of Movement, 2436 30th Street in Boulder. No mat, no worries. There will be mats available for use. For more information, please call out Boulder County at 303-499-5777 or send an email to info@outboulder.org. Please stay tuned next week for another exciting episode of Outsources.